I have some very close friends in Russia, and some of them immigrated now, some of them in Russia. But of course, I can speak with them very personally about my experience and so on. I see how much guilt they feel and how much pressure they feel from both sides, from inside the Russia and outside. For example, the first letter our society received from one of Russian psychoanalytical organizations, it was full of apologies and so on. But after that, Russian members asked us not to share this letter because they could be persecuted in Russia. It's absolutely shocking experience. We were not able to expect it, probably, is that this absolutely wild hostility and cruelty from Russian side. You know, what you see in internet, it is only part of that. Of course, if we speak with these people, raped women, injured child, tortured men, it's absolutely unbearable. We are shocked that Russian army behave in such way. It's absolutely dehumanized behavior, bestial cruelty. For our country, it's very important to feel solidarity now. And we are very grateful to states, to Britain, who express this solidarity, because several countries still under Russian propaganda and still in some way hesitated who is right, who is wrong. It is not war, it's Ukrainian conflict. There is both sides and all sides has their truth and so on. I think it's very painful for us to hear such things. So I think that resistance to Putin's propaganda, it's very important support for us. To say truth about the situation, to say truth about this absolutely inhuman cruelty of this war and to defend people here. Unfortunately, I see in many Western intellectual people the missing of understanding the situation. It is absolutely unprovoked war. It is very long war because it started 8 years ago, and now it is only acute stage of this war. But again and again, I heard from my European colleagues that probably it is something what American does, or probably it is something what NATO does. It's some political tricks and so on and so on. But these people use a great denial to see this absolutely cruel aggression of imperialistic mind and imperialistic society. What use these European intellectuals, like Stalin called it, useful idiots who supported Stalinism.
Welcome to today's conversation. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Dr. Igor Romanov. Dr. Romanov is a training psychoanalyst at the Ukrainian Psychoanalytic Society, and he's the head of their training program. We are about to have our conversation, which will describe his journey to safety, the status of the Ukrainian Psychoanalytic Society, what it's like to be functioning as part of the Psychoanalytic Society in these terrible times, and his reflections on these terrible times. Igor, welcome. Thank you for joining us. I know you are safe, and let me begin by asking you to share with us where you are, where your family is, and then we'll discuss where you're originally from and your journey. But fill us in on where you're located.
Thank you, Harvey. As you said, I'm a psychoanalyst and a university teacher, and I live in Kharkiv. It is a second city in Ukraine, the first capital of Soviet Ukraine, and the city with a long intellectual and cultural history, industrial and university city, and so on. In the early morning on February 24 at 5, we had heard shelling and explosions in our city, and we understood that the war started. We waited it, despite of some doubts and uncertainty, but we waited that probably war would be start. My wife and my 10-year-old son quickly gathered the very necessary things, documents, and so on, and we moved to another city, Sumy, by car. It was a strange choice, by the way, because Sumy is located 200 kilometers from Kharkov, and it is near Russian border too, as Kharkov is. But we thought that Sumy is a small city and not very interesting for Russian army. So we traveled along Russian border to this city, and we saw Ukrainian troops, and probably it was a Russian tank column. And we reached this city, and we had a house there from our relatives. And it was more safely than in Kharkov, because Kharkov was under attack, and it was bombed. But Sumy was more or less safe. But the city was surrounded, and we can't left it. And sometimes the city was shelled too, and the building near us were destroyed. And it was not an unclear situation, because Russian troops go around the city to Kyiv, and the city was surrounded under Ukrainian control, but around there was destroyed small villages and destroyed small towns and so on. After 2 weeks, we could leave the city, and it was very fearful travel because we have some there was some volunteers who helped us to found some road, and for example we received messages by protected messenger, and this messages informed us where Russian troops are and where we can go around and so on. So after about 100 kilometers, we reach a more safe area, and it became easy. And then we traveled about 1,500 kilometers to Romania border, and I sent my family to Romania. And I stayed here in Ukraine, in the city near Romania border. But now I think that probably I could come back to somewhere near my native city, Kharkiv.
And you have family or contacts in both the city you're in and where your family is?
Yes, every day we have telephone call, and they are safe. Yes, and my wife is working in international company, so her company helped her.
I see. But you're anticipating now that things have changed so that you could go back to your home city of Kharkiv?
Yes, I very want, because it's very painful for me to see how this city is destroyed now. And I try to organize some help for people in Kharkov from here. We buy medications and food for people and send it to Kharkov. But of course, I would like to go nearer and to have possibility to visit my city. And my office is destroyed now.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, after some bombing, it was destroyed. But some people helped me to make some small repair. But of course, I want to go back.
Now, we're recording this on Sunday, April 3rd, and it sounds like what you're describing, that there isn't a shortage of food or medicine. It may be more or less available in different cities, but that it is available if one seeks it out. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a very, very different situation in the cities which are under attack, and in the city where I am here. Here it's a very peaceful place, and there was no any danger attacks. But in Kharkov, it's difficult to find food and medications and so on.
I'd like to return a little later about the state of the war for the country, but if you could share with us, most of us listening are not familiar with the Ukrainian Psychoanalytic Society, what it was like before the invasion, and how it is functioning now, and how you see things for the future, obviously with great uncertainty, but give us a picture of what the society had been like.
Yes, we have a very long prehistory of psychoanalytical movement in Ukraine, and probably most of us had started our learning of psychoanalysis in the late 90s, and we visited psychoanalytical conferences and schools and so on. And at the beginning of 2000, we started our training, and we established our society as an IPA study group, I think approximately 6 or 7 years ago, and now we are IPA study group, and now we have 16 analysts, four of them are training analysts, and we have 28 candidates. And I think with the help of our sponsoring committee, we developed our training model very, very good. And we have many candidates, and we have many applicants for training. And I think we work well. We have outside of this training program, we have many, many cooperations with foreign analysts. For example, I am an organizer of Kleinian seminars with British colleagues about 20 years. So we have many such programs with British analysts, with American analysts, with German analysts. And so I think psychoanalysis developed in Ukraine very, very much and very quickly and was very popular. And we have many applicants for training. And not only psychoanalytical, but therapeutical training, which is much more developed. Of course, now it needs some transformation and should be reestablished in the new circumstances.
And currently, are you in touch with colleagues? Are patients keeping in contact with their analysts? What's the status of mental health care and training under these circumstances?
We created in our society, we created headquarters during this period to monitor the situation with our members and candidates. And we are very grateful to foreign colleagues because many analysts and societies help us very much. Today we had meeting with our European colleagues, and we discussed the possibilities to help our society and our members. Of course, first of all, the first task is safety.
Right.
Is it to protect our members, to help them to immigrate and to accommodate in other countries or in other places in Ukraine? It is a first task, and we gather money, or we gather some suggestions from foreign society about apartments and so on. It was the first task. But now I think many people want to reestablish their working frame because they reestablish their contact with patients. Some people who are abroad think about possibilities to work abroad. Some people, of course, we all try to help our people in Ukraine, our traumatized people, refugees, children, and other people who need help here. So there is different directions for our activity now.
Like under the pandemic, we had the new experience. For some of us, to be in a shared danger situation. Both analysts and analysand were at risk, and that is certainly the case in Ukraine. What's that been like?
Yes, you know, I think that pandemic prepared us to this situation in some way, because, for example, I personally worked remotely last time. So for my patient, it was not new experience to work online.
Right.
And it was not so difficult to work in this way. And of course, we all need some flexibility in the setting. For example, the question of money. Not all patients could pay now enough or could pay something. It is, for some patients, it's difficult to find place for online session. And with some patient, I keep contact by messages only. And I'm waiting for possibility to start our sessions. But now it is important to keep contact.
Mm-hmm.
It needs flexibility, I think. But at the same time, I feel how important it is for patients and for candidates to keep this therapeutic contact.
My understanding that part of the workings of the Ukrainian psychoanalytic community, if not the mental health community and medical community at large, has been to relate to Russian colleagues under ordinary circumstances in a very easy, fluid way. Is that understanding correct? And then, of course, my next question is to be what's happened now. But start us off before the war. What was it like between you and Russian colleagues?
You know, it's a difficult and multi-level problem, I think. And some of my Russian colleagues were first who sent me their apologize and their sorry for this situation. I know that some of my colleagues left their country very quickly after the war started. And I feel much sympathy to them. But unfortunately, many of Russian colleagues necessary work in organization which are included in Russian system, in totalitarian Russian system, and universities, for example, and societies and so on. So it is difficult to differentiate where is the personal responsibility, where is institutional responsibility. So we decided to stop our cooperation with Russian institutions, societies, universities, and so on, and we ask international community to do the same decision, because we tried to keep our personal contacts, our professional contacts, but we're seeing that now it is impossible to keep contacts with Russian psychoanalytical and educational institutions.
Has it been possible for you to have a conversation? And again, I don't know what is safe or not safe to talk with Russian colleagues, but if it were safe, would it be possible for you to share with them the truth of this atrocity and perhaps discover that they don't know it or they don't understand the magnitude of it, and to really talk person to person about what you, your family, your country is going through? Is that feasible?
It's possible, because I have some very close friends in Russia, and some of them immigrated now, some of them in Russia. But of course, I can speak with them very personally about my experience and so on. I see how much guilt they feel and how much pressure they feel from both sides, from inside the Russia and outside. From, for example, the first letter our society received from one of Russian psychoanalytical organizations. It was full of apologize and so on. But after that, these members, Russian members, asked us not to share this letter because they could be persecuted in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their support of Ukrainian colleagues. So I understand how difficult time for them now in Russia. But, you know, we have much more difficulties now in Ukraine.
Because
it is much danger. And because of that, I can't speak personally, but it's very difficult to speak in social context. For example, today we have this meeting with European colleagues, and I saw how difficult for Ukrainian colleagues to listen and to see Russian colleagues. It's very, very painful, and it evokes much hatred and so on.
Well, if I may stay on a difficult subject, as I mentioned, we're speaking to each other on April 3rd, and here in the States, we are learning just recently, as cities are being liberated, of the horrors that are being left behind in terms of the mass murders. I know what that's like for me to sit over here in safety and know this. Can you, if you can, share with us what this is like for you, your intimates, to see and to be so close to such darkness?
Yes, it's absolutely shocking experience, and we were not able to expect it, probably. This absolutely wild hostility and cruelty from Russian side. You know, what you see in internet, it is only part of that. Of course, if we speak with these people, raped women, injured child, tortured men, it's absolutely unbearable. We are shocked that Russian army behave in such way. It's absolutely absolutely dehumanized behavior, bestial cruelty. And I don't understand it enough. Probably we need time to understand it psychoanalytically, probably, and in other ways, because we are very close neighbors. We are Russian-speaking people in the east part of Ukraine, but our neighbors behave in such way. There are murderers, looters, and rapists, and so on. I don't understand it enough, because why people behave in such way? Only thought in my mind that there is people who grow up in totalitarian system, and they are tortured by their government, and then they identify with this poverty, and they find enemies to project their fears and their cruelty outside. And they're very ready to this. So not many causes for that, but they're very ready to be cruel.
The future is so uncertain. Yet I imagine you and the people close to you must be filled with wonder. How does this end? What do you imagine?
Now we have a little bit more quiet time, but I think it is not. It will be not a long pause. As we are waiting for next Russian big attack, and it probably will happen during 1 or 2 weeks, and we know that Putin wants to receive some victory in May, the victory day.
Yeah.
And so we are ready, if it is possible to be ready for this next battle. But after that, I hope, probably there will be new pause too. But I personally don't wait for finish this war so quickly. I think it will be continue. I think it will be continue up to the time when in Russia regime could change. I think it will not stop up to the time when Putin will go.
Is that a general feeling among your colleagues?
I think so.
Yeah. Is there more that we, the West, can do to be of help to you? And I say to you personally, to the mental health community, and to the country.
I think you really do many things for us. IPA gathered a fund for us and helps much for us. And I think it's important to help our candidates to reestablish their training and their practice. And I think it's important to help our people who need to escape the danger. For example, today we discuss how to help the family of our candidate who has a disabled child. And they need help abroad and so on. So it is a very personal help for our members. Another thing, I think it's for our country, it's very important to feel solidarity now. And we are very grateful to states, to Britain, who express this solidarity, because several countries still under Russian propaganda and still in some way hesitated who is right, who is wrong. It is not war, it's Ukrainian conflict. There is both sides, and all sides has their truths and so on. I think it's very painful for us to hear such things. So I think that resistance to Putin's propaganda, it's very important support for us to say truth about the situation, to say truth about this absolutely unhuman cruelty of this war, and to defend people here.
Well, you've said it as clearly and articulately as one can. Is there anything before we finish? Is there anything you'd like to let us know, or basically to say truth about this horror? That may be the most important message that we can take from this.
I don't think what to say, but unfortunately, I see in many Western intellectual people the missing of understanding the situation. It is absolutely unprovoked war. It is very long war, because it started 8 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now it is only acute stage of this war. But again and again, I heard from my European colleagues that probably it is something what American does, or probably it is something what NATO does. It's some political tricks and so on. But these people use a great denial to see this absolutely cruel aggression of imperialistic mind and imperialistic society. What use these European intellectuals, like Stalin called it, useful idiots, who supported Stalinism and so mm-hmm. on.
Yeah.
But so we try again and again to send information to our colleagues. It's and to your society, because I think sometimes your society is too passive in your support. Only now we started to receive weapons and necessary things for this war, but for a long time we were almost alone.
Igor, thank you. There will be many people who will listen to this conversation and will either deepen their commitment and understanding, or enlarge their understanding because of what you share with us. I wish you well. I am always available if you would like to be back in touch, and we can reconnect in this way, and you can keep me and our listeners up to date on what's happening to you, the psychoanalytic community, and in general to Ukraine. Thank you for spending this time with us, and be well.
Thank you, Harvey.